This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the Kiwi Fruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Donald Bird.
And Fran Bird.
And I am Stuart Burks. Now, Don, you and Fran came here to Palmerston North, I believe it was about 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's after a long life down, mainly in the South Island.
Nearly 45 years in Dunedin. 52 to, I don't know when we came here. But nearly all my professional life was in Dunedin. Probably because I had developed my own practice and I didn't feel I could walk away from it.
A practice doing what?
Public practice in adjusting insurance claims for insurance companies. And I had a staff to help me with it, with offices in Invercargill, Dunedin, Christchurch, Timaru, Wellington, Greymouth, and that's as far as I got, I think.
Okay, adjusting insurance claims, that sort of accounting type process?
Well, I used accounting techniques for it, but I the ordinary adjuster will be either a mechanic or something like that who can do the assessments himself from his own experience. I didn't pretend to have that sort of knowledge and experience. I drew on others, and I was able to keep myself busy and get the paper of the insurance companies doing it that way.
Oh, okay. So a claim would come in, they'd ask you to look at it and say, is this okay? Or
and if I needed a specialist, I would employ a specialist at their expense.
Yeah, okay. And you were able to build up a big, thriving business?
There's one time when I was getting probably 70-80% of all the losses in the South Island, including the Anangahoo earthquake, including the Abbotsford landslip, where there were hundreds of houses in both cases. And we had equinoctial storms every season when every open front building in Otago blew down, so I was pretty much involved in those. And then of course there were the big fires, which probably the biggest was the North Otago Farmers North Otago, what was it? I think North Otago Farmers. And there was a whole block burnt out with five or six different businesses in Oamaru, and a lot of time had to go into those. But I was hardly ever home in those days because before I could finish the last job, there was another one.
So were there more of the I suppose, some were natural-type disasters. Do you think there were more then than now? Because there's...
There probably was, because there weren't the same safety measures.
Oh, the standards, building standards.
Standards have been developed a little bit. Our oldest son is still in the business, and he's still doing much the same sort of work.
Okay.
He's in Christchurch. And he's not short of work either, because he can handle it all right. He knows how to do it.
Yeah. Okay, and then you moved to Palmerston North.
We moved to Palmerston North in retirement, probably after 10 years of retirement. We were going to go to Hawke's Bay, and our daughter, who had been living in Palmerston North for 20 years, said we were free to go to Hawke's Bay if we wanted, but I needed to know, or we needed to know, that if we did that and we had a problem, she couldn't help us, because she was committed to the Manawatu Hospital. in a specialty role there.
Okay.
So we came to Palmerston North instead, and we found a very comfortable place to live.
So what was your feeling about before coming? You thought Hawke's Bay rather than Palmerston North, although you had a daughter here.
Yeah.
So the image of Hawke's Bay was preferable
was
to that
than Palmerston North. Palmerston North's worst enemies, I think, were its own people in those days. They would run down the place very quickly, particularly the climate. And we find the climate's pretty good. I mean, look at the day today. It's as good as you'll get anywhere. Yeah. So it may be that it's changed a bit, but we're quite happy here.
Is that because you're comparing it to Dunedin and in comparison?
Well, I had nearly 15 years in Auckland too. So.
Oh, yeah.
And 5 or 6 years in mid-Canterbury and 2 or 3 years in South Canterbury, which were quite nice places to live.
So when you say people from Palmerston North were their own worst enemy, what was your image? Presumably you heard from them, what was the image you had of Palmerston North before you came?
The weather was awful. Climate was no good. Nothing to do. In fact, when we first came to Palmerston North, we wondered what we were going to do because, in our spare time, because there was so little on, shall we say, compared with Dunedin. But when we got here and got involved, we found that there are equally as many activities here to get involved in. And the Massey University, I think, is a big help in that. And Dunedin was a target university, which we were pretty much involved in.
Okay, so what sort of things did you take up when you came here?
Well, it was as we came to Palmerston North, I pretty well lost my sight. It was almost concurrent. So there wasn't nearly as much as that I could do that I had been able to do before. but our son-in-law here has been able to help by setting up a big computer screen and he's been a wonderful help in many ways.
I think the biggest issue probably when you come at our age into a strange place is that you haven't got the entree into groups like you have when you've got children. You know, children, you've got kindies and schools and things that you can become involved with and get to know people. At our age, you have to go out and make a determined effort to meet the locals, which is what we did and joined several groups deliberately simply to get to know local people.
We're going to different groups on Sunday, Mondays, Tuesdays. Wednesday was usually the day at home. Thursday sometimes, Fridays. And Saturday was another day at home.
Yes, so there's certainly a lot to get involved with.
And we joined U3A here for the what I call the plenary sessions. We couldn't do that in Dunedin because it was over full.
The seminar series.
We would have had to go out to Mosgiel for it, which wasn't much fun.
So how large is U3A there if they get so?
Over 100, I think. 100.
It was far more than that. It was quite big. But it operated just slightly differently to the one here. It doesn't have as many small groups in Dunedin.
It had sort of monthly meetings, wasn't it?
Yes, they had, and the groups would be 50 or 60, and they would have a limit, a number.
Yes.
And they might meet once a month right through the year following one particular topic or something like that. So it was a different sort of setup. I think the Mosgiel group operated more like this, with small groups meeting in homes.
Yeah, well, we've got there's about now 37 groups, and so some meet in halls. Some have membership up to about 40 or so, and then others are small. But if they get up to that sort of size, often they split or set up a new group. Yeah, and then there's the two seminar series each year.
Mm-hmm.
So the random series. Mm. So. And so you have family here as well that you...
We have one daughter who's, charged nurse. She's a nurse educator at the Manawatu Hospital. Mm. She was in charge of the Coronary Care Sex Award for many years. Mm. Her husband has a manufacturing plant not far from the hospital, or not far from the airport, actually.
Mm.
They're sort of stuck here for a while, but they don't see it as a lifetime occupation for either of them, I don't think.
Well, the occupation or the location?
Well, the location, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, okay. So what, they'd move back to the South Island, do you think?
Or? I doubt it. No, Jeff came from Auckland originally. His father was... Commissioner of Crown Lands and various places in Dunedin, in New Zealand rather, and we first met them when they came to Dunedin. He got the job as Commissioner in Dunedin, and then he went to Wellington or one of the other places. They moved him around a fair bit, but he was in a hurry to get to the top, so he didn't stay anywhere for very long.
Whereas for your occupation, you could have set up something?
I could stay where I was as long as I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was free to do what I wanted to, which was one of the advantages of being your own employer.
Yeah. And you think that's still possible in this occupation, in your occupation?
I think it probably is. Well, our son Grant is doing the same sort of thing, but under a different sort of structure.
Mm.
And he must be coming on for retirement now, age now.
Okay, yeah.
Probably another 10 years to go.
Oh, no, he's 62.
Yeah, well, you might go another 10 years, but you probably won't.
No.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's been a lot of amalgamation of things like accounting firms, hasn't there? So
yeah, the big accounting firms have amalgamated a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I never did that sort of thing. I wanted to be in charge of my own paddle, as it were.
Mm, yeah.
And the offside of that was that I had to take the rap if anything went wrong. Mm. And I had to make sure there was sufficient money to pay the wages each week.
Yeah, yeah.
I always worked on the proposition that the first people wages to be paid were the staff.
Hmm.
And I didn't get anything until it was they were paid.
Yeah.
And it never did me any harm.
Hmm. Okay. Now, with there's a lot of talk about the insurance problems with the Christchurch earthquake. That's sort of obviously it came after you retired. But what's your impression of that? Was it somehow mismanaged, you think?
My impression, I think, is that they had too much work to handle and not enough people to do it. Mm. Not enough staff. I mean, compared
with... Not enough staff who knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they would employ postmen, for example, that sort of thing, to do some of their technical work. And you can't do that. Our son Grant was involved in it, but he wisely confined himself to commercial properties.
Mm.
Excuse me. And he has not had the same sort of problems.
Mm. Had they enough financial resources to cope with the...
Oh, I wouldn't know. I haven't been close enough to it.
Mm.
They have used up whatever financial resources they had anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But it's... going to cost you more and more money if you could do several things twice, two or three times.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think there's been a bit of that. Mm. In my day, we didn't have to do anything twice.
Yeah.
We did it right the first time. But it was not the same volume of work at once.
Yeah, so it was a sudden intensity. Was it a different sort of problem this time as well? Because they were talking about the liquefaction and the aftershocks and so on.
I never had to deal with liquefaction. But I really don't know much about Christchurch earthquake because I wasn't involved at all.
Yeah.
Some of my generation were, but they didn't ask me to come back and do any work.
Well, your sight had gone by that stage, so
I couldn't see what
to do anything. Because that was after we came here.
So you probably the first I've actually recorded someone who's had sort of two cochlear implants and the hearing problems and all that sort of thing, but you're probably the first person that I've been recording with sight issues. So how does that affect them? What is done to help people with sight problems?
Well, you can't do anything with the left eye because it's got a curtain right over it. The right one is just macular degeneration. Excuse me. So there is limited vision there, and I can use a magnifying glass, which I carry somewhere for close-up work. But it enables me to get by.
Yeah.
And the screen on the computer is a big screen with big
So are there resources available to you to help, or are there things in, say, if you're in town or whatever, things to help you?
I think I've pretty well got as many as they have available so far. The Blind Foundation can be very helpful. They will come around and label you various items of equipment so you know what they are and don't get yourself burnt or cut or whatever.
How did they do that?
I don't know. How did they do that, friend?
Well, for instance, on the on the oven, they have put little raised buttons.
Ah, okay.
That just to press on with a blue background. At the important points on the oven to give you the temperature because you can't read.
Ah, okay.
The printed things on there so you can feel it.
Okay.
Probably John doesn't use that as much as a woman would, but that sort of thing. We managed to get large. The printing on an ordinary keyboard is useless for someone with poor vision.
Yeah.
We managed to get stick-on stamps that you can that give you all the things that are on your keyboard, and you can stick on a bigger stamp with a much bigger letter on it. So we've gone through a couple of sets of those because they tend to wear.
So it's just a standard keyboard, but with much larger letters on it.
Letters.
Yes. Do you use things like voice to text if you want to write things, or the computer to read things out?
I haven't tried to do that.
No.
My computer will give me a voice response.
He's also got a CCTV, which is like a great magnifying glass. So you put a book in underneath it, and it comes up on the screen. They're fine for doing small things. You couldn't read a novel that way because you have to keep moving the page to get a whole line in on your screen. But for small stuff, or you're reading a small article in the paper or something, or reading just the headlines, they're ideal. Want to check an account or something like that. That's easy, but they're not meant, or I don't think they're meant for the likes of reading a book.
But you tend to use your ears much more than your eyes.
Yeah, you use audio books then?
Talking books are important.
Talking books, okay. Yeah, because you can get those through the library as well.
The foundation have them. Shouldn't call it the foundation now, it's got a new name, but they have their own library, and public library here have talking books.
Yeah, okay.
And I did 4 or 5 magazines each week, like Time Magazine, New Zealand Listener, National Business Review, and that sort of thing comes down every week.
One tape.
Special reading RB teacher. Digital, is that the library you could log into something where there's probably nearly 300 magazines now that you can download issues onto your computer?
Well, this is done through the Blind Foundation, but maybe it's the same thing.
If you can blow them up on the screen, probably you could.
No, this one's done through just through sound.
Okay. Now you prefer that, I take it, for the.
Yeah. I can go to sleep better.
So, did you find that you're able to compensate for the vision loss? Like your hearing gets better?
Not really, no.
Not really. No.
No, but fortunately, retirement doesn't matter so much. Once you get to.
It would have been very difficult to run a practice with his vision as it is now.
Early, I think.
If that had happened at age 45, it would have been much more hard. Because he can't drive for starters.
Well, we do have blind lecturers at Massey now.
That's right.
Quite how they do that.
But I say at 45, when he was 45, there wasn't the.
No, there was nothing. There wasn't the that sort of thing there.
Digital.
IT
equipment.
None of that.
At all.
So do you have any sort of special software on your computer for this sort
of
thing?
Not really, no.
No, okay. Have you thought of that, or you've been told about some of those? Or?
No, not really, I don't think. Once I get finally desperate, I will find out what's available. At the moment, I'm just sort of coasting along.
I think they're... they're gradually developing more and more things that do different things.
And I think it will be easier for a younger generation who've come through using computers and are really adaptable to the new stuff. It's much harder for our type of generation when we haven't used them.
That's true.
One of the things that rankles me is the fact that the younger generation seem to think the older generation know as much as they do about the likes of computers and mechanical aids and all that sort of thing, and that's not true.
I think that they've gone in phases, actually. When computers first came in, then the young people had to know a lot in order to work them, and then as you got more and more software packages and so on, it got to the stage where some young people knew how to play games on a computer but didn't know how to do a lot of the other things, so they knew less than some of the older ones. But quite how it's going now is it depends what they're using and how often they use them. Do you use them for communication with sort of family around the world and so on?
Email,
not Skype.
No,
video phone sort of thing.
No.
Probably could do, but
Life's
complicated enough without having to get into that.
Fair enough. You just do what's comfortable. Yeah. So, how did you find moving to Palmerston North Frank?
Surprisingly easy in lots of respects. I mean, we had no family left in Dunedin. Our main reason for moving to the North Island was that we had a daughter-in-law who was dying of cancer in Auckland with children. And every time we went up to be of any help to them, and we'd sometimes go up and stay a fortnight, but if we flew up, it cost us $1,500 each time. Once a year we would drive up from Dunedin. It's quite a long way, so we only did that about once a year. And suddenly thought, well, we've got no family left in Dunedin, no ties that can't be broken. I mean, my mother had died and we had family connections. Why don't we move to the North Island? And eventually we settled on Palmerston North. And it really... The transition was surprisingly easy.
The worst feature was packing up the house.
what it is, picking up, because we were still in the big family home.
Oh, yeah, downsizing is always a problem, yeah.
We had the advantage that we knew what we were coming to because we bought this in advance. We came to look at houses on the school holidays one year, didn't find anything we liked the look of, and then about 3 weeks later our daughter rang and said, I think I've found something that might, excuse me, might suit you, which was this place. We were in Auckland at the time, so our son said, I'll take you down at the weekend to have a look at it, and we finished up putting in an office, or we put in an office sight unseen and said we will come and see it next weekend.
Yeah, okay.
And finished up buying it, so we had the advantage that we knew what we were coming to, how much space we had here. It would have been much harder to pack up and downsize if you didn't know what you were coming to here.
Definitely.
We still had to buy a lot of new furniture.
Well, we decided to do that anyway, because our, some of our furniture was, by then, was 50, 60 years old, and we thought it was not worth bringing it with us, and we would replace it.
And you found moving from one university town to another was...
we found Palmerston North was remarkably lively as far as university life was concerned.
It wasn't as obvious as
Dunedin. Not as obvious as Dunedin, but...
Now, maybe because we lived in the north end of the city, which is where the university is. So every time we went into town, we drove through the university precincts. So we were very aware of when it was holidays and there were no students around. We're here because the bulk of your students seem to be up on the hill. And the university's up there with the river being a division between them. It's there's not nearly the town gown link.
That's right.
Here in Palmerston that there is in Dunedin. Students are much more involved in the city life in Dunedin than they are here. But that's a physical thing. And certainly we noticed that difference.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.